This is the Head Torch podcast. Welcome. Our mission, to create a mentally healthy culture at work. Keeping the conversations alive, our podcasts bring you great presenters and stimulating discussion on mental health and well-being in the workplace. Enjoy. Really, really warm welcome to you all at this first Thursday Wellbeing Hour. So let me just give you a little bit more of an outline of what we're going to do today. So we'll have a few introductions with Rachel, and then Rachel will present to us for a short while, and then she'll pose us a question. We're then going to go into breakout groups. Nick Lander, our colleague, is working, beavering away in the background, doing all things technical. So he will put us into breakout groups, and we'll have about 15 minutes or so together. So do introduce yourselves, get to know the people in your group, as well as focus on the question that Rachel has posed to us. After those 15 minutes in those breakout rooms, we'll come back together and we'll have a chance to share some key points that you might have discussed with your colleagues in your room. And you'll also have the opportunity, obviously, to ask Rachel some questions. So let me share the screen with you and we shall get started. Here we are. Also, for the purposes of the presentation, just for the recording purposes, it'd be really helpful if you could switch your screens off just while Rachel is talking to us. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Rachel Suff to you. She is the Senior Policy Advisor at CIPD, and she's going to talk to us today all about mental health awareness for managers, why the CIPD says it's a must. So Rachel leads on CIPD's public policy for employment relations and health and well-being. She's led a range of policy and research studies about employment relations, health and well-being at work, including the CIPD's annual Health and Well-being at Work report, which I don't know about you, but it's one of the key reports that we cite across the year and throughout our programs, because it's so well researched. She represents the CIPD on key government and external advisory groups, and her prior roles include working as a senior policy advisor at ACAS. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Rachel to you, and Rachel will speak to us about will introduce herself using a mystery object, and then she'll move seamlessly into our presentation. So Rachel, over to you.
Thanks so much, Amy, and I am really delighted to be here with Head Torch and everybody else who's joined us today as well. I don't think there is a more important issue in workplaces today than looking after people's health and well-being and their mental health, of course, as part of that. So a little bit about me. I'm in Brighton here, so some of you might be quite far away. It's a lovely, bright, sunny day here. And I have learned a lot about myself in terms of my mental well-being, especially since the onset of the pandemic. And I think a lot of us have had that chance to reflect a bit. I've thought a lot more about what's important. I've realised that having a healthy routine and looking after my physical health, getting outdoors, exercising, riding a bike, which is one of my mystery objects that I bought during the pandemic, that's been really, really good for keeping me feeling mentally well as well. Also, I'm holding up here my latest knitting project, because I have been knitting a lot over the last, 30 odd years really, but especially over the last couple of years. So I find all these, call them pastimes, mindful activities, really important. I do have a diagnosed mental health condition. I manage that really well as long as I do take care of my routine, my activities, and I get the support I need from work as well, and my manager. So that brings us quite nicely on to the focus of this presentation. And I'm really looking forward to the discussion afterwards as well. So if we have my first slide, really briefly about the CIPD. Some of you may be familiar with us, but not everybody. So we're the professional body for HR and people development, mainly based in the UK. And I do just want to flag our purpose, which you can see on the right hand side, which is our commitment to champion better work and working lives. And for us, people's health and well-being is central to that purpose. It really is. It runs through so much of what we do. And if you think about it, you can't have a good quality of working life if your health and well-being isn't prioritized. And of course, that must mean your mental health as much as your physical health. If we move on to the next slide. Now, the context, the backdrop to this discussion has to really be the impact of the pandemic, which hasn't gone away yet. And I think immediately the risks to people's physical health was, of course, straight there in front of us, very obvious, the risk of infection from the virus. But it also very quickly became apparent that the risks were not just to our physical health, they were very much to our mental well-being and health as well. This is a fact that came through very strongly in the survey report that Amy mentioned that we published the middle of last year. Over 80% of our HR professionals were concerned, half of those extremely concerned about the impact of the pandemic on people's mental health. So it came through very strongly. And in one sense, that recognition is a positive because it means that there is that awareness of those risks to people's mental health and just the challenges of what so many people have experienced in so many different ways across the course of the pandemic. And at the same time, I think it's important to appreciate that everyone's mental health fluctuates across a very broad spectrum, and we can't be expected to feel great or even good all of the time. I can feel quite different one day to the next day. It's constantly moving, really. And we have done research as well that has shown that a lot of people have actually said that they've maintained their mental well-being during the pandemic. So I think that is good. So not everybody who says that their mental health is compromised or they're not feeling good necessarily has a diagnosed medical mental health condition. But the challenges to many people's mental well-being are very real. And I think organisations need to recognise that some groups in particular will be at particular risk. So, for example, if you already have a mental health condition and so on. And just being aware of that general climate that is ongoing and the uncertainty and the fatigue and what's going on in someone's personal life as well as their work situation all is part of the mix in terms of affecting our well-being. So moving on, what was very encouraging, if we see the next findings from the survey, is that the majority of organisations are acting on that concern and have put in place additional measures to support people's health and well-being. And you can see here that the top measure is more focus on looking after employees' mental health, which is great, followed very closely by more support tailored to individuals' needs and concerns. And I was really pleased to see that so high up this table. You can see the other measures that organisations have taken as well, because everybody's mental health is unique to them. Therefore, the support that organisations and line managers discuss and so on and put in place has to really be suited to that individual's needs and be unique as well. So the kind of workplace adjustments that you might make and so on. So I was really pleased to see that recognition of individualised support and understanding. And then if we move on, I think, to the key focus on the next slide of, well, what role do line managers have for well-being? What should it be? What expectations are there on the parts of organisations to support health and well-being? We know from over the 20 years that we've been running this health and well-being surveys, we've got a lot of evidence built up And we have seen over that period of time more and more expectation on managers to manage people well and to support their health and well-being. And there's a lot of responsibility that is placed on line managers, quite rightly so, as long as they are supported to do so. And just to give some examples in terms of mental health, tackling work-related stress, big focus for organisations. A lot of them look to train line managers to prevent and deal with stress in their teams by training and so on. So that's one example. Also, line managers predominantly have responsibility for managing absence and return to work. Many people will have been off with a mental health condition. It is a major cause of absence, especially long-term absence. And then finally, we looked at how organisations support people with a disability or health condition in some detail. And the main one of the main ways that organisations support people is having a supportive line management style that treats people as individuals. Again, that focus on the individuals. So again, that responsibility showing for line managers. So clearly, line managers do play a very central role as far as organisations are concerned in terms of supporting people's health and wellbeing and their mental health. But if we look at the next slide, I've got some findings here again from the survey, which shows that there is potentially another side to the story that isn't quite as positive that we need to be aware of, because this shows the most common causes of stress at work. And you can see after workload and a manageable volume of work, the second main cause, and this is the same every year, is management style as a cause of stress. And this shows how important the quality of that line management role is in terms of supporting our mental well-being, how harmful the impact can be potentially if line managers don't go about their role in the right supportive way, where they're not aware perhaps of the impact that their behaviour can have on people. We know that people often leave an organisation, not because of the organisation, but perhaps because they're not happy with how they're managed. So the line manager, their whole role in terms of people management has a big defining impact on our well-being. And a key message, as I stress on the next slide, key message from the COPD, based on all our evidence, is that good people management is key to effective wellbeing support and how that support is delivered in the organisation. But we do need more investment, particularly in terms of making sure that line managers feel confident, they feel capable, they're not afraid of issues like mental health, that they can get to know people in their teams as individuals and so on. And we also know, though, that this is a big responsibility for line managers. And we know that they are under a lot of demands as well, I mean, especially at the moment, operationally, in terms of responding and fulfilling their responsibilities operationally. And we know that they're very often squeezed middle because they don't always have the time, the space, the training, the guidance, the support to fulfill their people management role, especially for supporting people's health and wellbeing. And if I just demonstrate that on the next slide, this is another set of findings on the left-hand side from the survey. And we can see that well under half, 43% of organisations, the top finding, 43% have trained managers to support staff with mental ill health. Therefore, it isn't surprising the next two findings demonstrate quite clearly that there are low levels of confidence on the part of HR in managers' capability, really, to support staff with mental wellbeing. So 38% think managers are confident to have sensitive conversations and signpost to more expert qualified sources of help where needed. And then finally, just 31% think managers are confident to spot those early warning signs that could be a sign of distress, people not coping, poor mental health. And another finding on the right-hand side, as I said, we've also been surveying employees regularly about their experiences of work during the pandemic. And this is one question that we've asked quite regularly. This is the most recent finding from towards the end of last year. Since the onset of COVID, has your employer or line manager checked in on your health and wellbeing? And this was well over a year into the pandemic. And we can see here that 2/3 said yes, that's good. My employer's asked about how I am. And then 1/3 though said no. And that's disappointing because we know many organisations have been encouraging managers to embed health and wellbeing as part of the regular one-to-one checkup. I mean, at CIPD, everybody's asked. I'm asked by my manager as soon as I meet every week for a regular one-to-one, how are you? And we might just talk for, you know, half the catch-up about how I am. And I know that I can talk to my manager about anything really, including how I'm feeling. But that won't necessarily happen automatically. It does take confidence. And line managers need to be guided. They need to be trained. They need to know that having a trusting relationship can really be the bedrock to have those kind of discussions that don't feel threatening and so on. They really need the confidence, and it's so important at the moment as well. If we just move on to the next slide, I'm not going to go through this in detail because we've got our guide that we developed with Mind for managers, and it's all about mental health and supporting people's mental health. I just wanted to pull out these extracts about how do you have a compassionate conversation about wellbeing if you are, say, concerned about somebody's state of mind, if you think that they're not coping and so on, and they haven't talked to you yet about it. Hopefully people will feel that they can talk to their manager. That's what you want. If they feel that they are not feeling well, that they need some extra support and so on. But what we find is that a lot of managers, not out of prejudice, but out of perhaps fear of saying the wrong thing, perhaps making it worse, they say nothing. And that's even worse. What we know is that most people would prefer an honest, open inquiry about how they are, as opposed to embarrassment, reluctance to talk about the issue, because that can just perpetuate the sort of fear and stigma that is out there. And I think it's quite important to demystify how you have that conversation. And I think part of it is about being a good people manager. And if you are routinely asking in your team meetings and on a one-to-one basis how people are, then it will seem like a more natural part of the conversation. I'm sure this is an area that Amy and her team cover quite a lot in their training and all the support they provide for organisations as well. So it would be really good to hear from Amy as well about this. But I think there aren't, in one sense, any huge specialist skills involved. It's about common sense. It's about asking simple, open, non-judgmental questions, really listening. I don't think we can underestimate the importance of just of listening, showing empathy, compassion, and so on. But these kind of bullets are just helpful prompts about how somebody can start that conversation, and questions that are more helpful to ask than other questions, for example. And I think as part of this conversation, I think it's important to remember as well that it is okay to notice if you feel that somebody who you are probably hopefully in the best person as a best place as a manager to know and understand if there are changes in their behavior, it is okay to notice those changes if you think that somebody is appearing withdrawn, their performance is slipping in an area. So notice, don't interpret. It's not your job to interpret or give advice. You're there to give support, to listen, and so on. And we can, I think, address this more in the breakout groups as well and when we come back. If we move on to the next slide, which is one of my final ones, I just want to really give a little overview in terms of what the line manager role is in terms of supporting mental health. And first of all, important to say what their role isn't as well, because we're not expecting line managers to be medical experts, counsellors, clinicians, or act in that way. And I think that's why the training, the understanding, the education around mental health is so important, so that line managers do need to understand where their line lies between what I've started to describe in terms of listening, giving support, signposting, and so on, but not giving advice, because I think it could be quite easy to stray into situations that somebody isn't comfortable or qualified to deal with, where hopefully there are more expert sources of help, such as occupational health, if you have that in the organisation, employee assistance programme, counselling, somebody's GP and mental health services and so on as well. There is support available. So at the basis, as I've said, to have those conversations, hopefully somebody can come to you and talk to you as a manager or a colleague if they're wanting to share something about their mental health or another health condition. But it's that relationship that really lays the basis for that conversation. And by having an early conversation, I don't think we can underestimate the importance of that as well, because just being able to talk to your manager and discuss what you think might help to balance your symptoms and your work with work can really help prevent issues from escalating, and just being listened to and having that compassion and understanding can be just makes such a huge difference. I know that from experience. And then secondly, this is for the organisation really to as a prompt to remember that line managers are in this situation where they're managing often quite a lot of competing demands, and that they will need guidance, support, training around their role and what their role is for health and wellbeing and mental health as well. In particular, they really are like the gateway. They're often the only link that an employee might have with the organization, especially if people are working remotely, for example. So they can be that gateway where people can access support, changes, and so on to support their mental health. And then finally, line manager wellbeing. Line managers themselves are under a lot of pressure at the moment. They'll be managing perhaps some quite complex situations in their teams as well, considering the situation that many will have been under. And they need to know that their wellbeing is very important, and they shouldn't be afraid to reach out for help. Practice healthy self-care, not work long hours, and so on, and just be given the time to have those conversations with people. Then my slide at the end is just showing a lot of further resources that we've got for managers around mental health and all the other sort of areas that go alongside that, like responding to suicide risk, compassionate bereavement support. We've got line manager support as well as for HR in all of these areas. So it's all there to download if you need it. So that's my presentation. On our final slide here, really looking forward to having feedback from the breakout rooms, because it's one thing saying, oh, this is what should happen and this is the ideal sort of scenario. But I know that in the real world, when you're faced with a situation and somebody comes to you or doesn't come to you with an issue, then, you know, it can be really challenging to think, oh, what do I say? What's the right approach? What should I remember here? And how best can I manage this situation? And I don't think there's anything more helpful really than discussing and not being afraid to ask as well. So this is a question that we thought would be, Amy and I thought would be good to pose in the breakout session. What do you do as a manager if you feel someone isn't coping, but they don't want to discuss it? And I think this is an issue that can come up quite often. So obviously the ideal is that you want somebody to come to you and tell you, but that doesn't always happen. People can be quite reluctant to talk about mental health. It took me several years to talk about my mental health at work. So I really don't underestimate how difficult it can be. So this is the question that we're posing.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Rachel. Absolutely fantastic font of knowledge and information there. All the facts and figures are there, aren't they, to back up why it's just absolutely essential, fundamental really to the well-being of an individual, and essentially then to the well-being of the organization, right? To upskill managers and enable them to feel confident when supporting someone else's mental health and well-being. Thank you so much. So the question, what do you do as a manager if you feel someone is not coping but they don't want to discuss it? So we're going to go into breakout spaces now. And Nick, if we can come back perhaps just after 12:40, that would be great. Nick's going to put us into groups. And when you go into groups, do put your camera back on, folks, and remember to unmute yourself so you can have a good chat with the people in your room as well as having a chat about this question. And we really look forward to hearing some of the key points that you have and also any other questions that you might want to put to Rachel when we all come back together. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Do put your cameras on. It'd be lovely to see all your shiny, smiley faces. I hope you had excellent discussion with your colleagues in your breakout spaces. I certainly had a very enlightening conversation. So it's opportunity now to share any key points or questions that you might have with Rachel. So let's, if you wouldn't mind, because we are quite a hefty crowd. So if you wouldn't mind just using the hands up option, which is at the bottom? Yeah, bottom of your screen, you'll find reactions. If you could use that, if you've got something you would like to share. Yeah, Nick Payne, do unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good, good. So yeah, we had
sorry to interrupt, Nick. If you wouldn't mind just saying who you are, who you work for, that'd be lovely, just so that everyone has an understanding.
Absolutely. So I'm Nick Payne and I'm the on-trade sales director for the Czech brewery Budweiser Budva. I live in South Wales and the brewery's based out in Czech Republic, but we have a head office in Bristol. I have a team of 10 and there's 21 people in the business.
Great.
So I was on with Kylie and Paul. Where is he? I'm looking for him.
No worries, just give us your point.
One of the things we talked around is time is of the essence. And actually, when we were in the lockdown one, we were all saying this is quite nice in some aspects because everything was sort of slowed right down. But since we've come out, it seems to have accelerated. And what we taught was the importance of actually getting time in the diary to have those conversations with people, which is really important. And one of the things I've adopted is... we put sort of the commercial and quarterly annual reviews aside and we just have a development or a personal conversation once every 4 to 6 weeks. There's obviously the flexibility because you talk, you email, you're chatting to people all the time, but you know you have that hour every 4 to 6 weeks and then you diarize it for the next time and you're just really strict on that doesn't move. And then one of the other things I've done, which I talked about, if you remember last August, and I've really encouraged my team to do it, is that actually we all need to be responsible for each other as well as ourselves. And what we do is we adopt sort of three statements, which is when you're chatting to people, you got use your ears, and you know it's what they say, what they mean, and what did we hear? Because not everyone will open up to me as a line manager, but they might open up to Amy because they got a real close friendship, and then Amy might call me and say, look, Nick, you know, Angus is under the cosh a bit. It's worth giving him a bit more time, or you know, and giving him a call. And that's what we've done, where we've all taken that responsibility, and that was sort of shared amongst the group that they're either doing that or they're going to implement it.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Great stuff there. Rachel, do you want to, have you got any response to Nick there?
Well, where in South Wales are you?
In Newport.
Oh, because I'm from Porthcawl.
Oh, lovely.
But just really, I think that's just really sound approach. I don't think we can overestimate the importance of that real deep listening, and just listening and reading between the lines. And I think with so many people working remotely, because we talked about that in our breakout room as well, is it easier or harder to pick up on the fact that somebody might not be coping or struggling with their mental health and so on? And I think it's double-edged. I think it can be harder in some ways, but also I think it's been made easier for a lot of people, because it just lends itself to a more human conversation, I think. Just, you know, I've had my puppy and my bike in the background when I've been having conversations with my manager. And, you know, I know that I've developed a closer working relationship. We've had those little insights into people's lives. And I think that at the end of the day, what we said in our group is that that's what it's all about. And then you can just have those more human interactions, and then that relationship develops and just lends itself to more willingness, more confidence on the part of somebody to open up. But
absolutely,
talking to somebody else, is it, there's somebody in our team I've been a bit worried about, never put their camera on. I know somebody else has a closer relationship, and so they, you know, they're nurturing that and having coffees, and you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time, and not everybody, you can't force somebody to talk about their mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about building that connection, isn't it, Rachel, so that somebody does feel more able to talk about it if they want to talk about it. I think that's key as well, isn't it? That not everybody wants to talk about their ill health if they have ill health. Angela, you had your hand up there. Do you want to say something? Come in, Angela.
Hi, I didn't mean to. I must have just my iPad must have just fallen. Sorry,
I didn't. No worries.
Specific, but it, now
do you want to put your camera on, Angela, so we can see you?
Well, I'm holding this iPad up, so it's not ideal. But hold on, I'm positioning. I haven't got an iPad holder, which
No worries.
Hopefully, you can hear me. See me. Hi. I had a question, but I think one of the things.
Sorry, Angela. Do you just want to say who you are, where you work?
And I'm currently working on a contract with Scottish Women's Aid, who are a charity who are the leader in supporting domestic abuse in Scotland, and so that's had a challenge in itself. Some issues that and from a, you know, client and networking. But I just I wanted to say, does Rachel think that the pandemic has made people feel generally more comfortable talking about mental health? Because I know, having read all the CIPD literature and stuff, it's very, we're all talking about it, but we would be, wouldn't we? Do you think it's helped perhaps convince some of the, I'm not going to call them dinosaurs because that's unfair, but perhaps the people that take a bit longer, and some people that are maybe quite resistant to thinking that, well, actually it is part of a leader's core job, not something that's a nice to have. Do you think that?
Thanks, Angela. Sorry, I'm just cutting to the quick. Rachel, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. And I think that was happening incrementally, slowly before the pandemic, in terms of more open workplaces and so on around mental health. I think it has had a little push forward, not across the board and not in every workplace. It still has to be a real conscious effort on the part of employers and HR and managers and so on to create that environment. But I think, yeah, it's higher up the boardroom agenda, I think, now, because health and wellbeing was a business critical issue during the pandemic, and we saw it really get more attention at the senior level, and that's what we need. We need leaders who are being compassionate and being aware of it. But I think there's still a lot more work to be done before we talk about mental health with the same openness and easiness.
Yeah.
As
yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Rachel. Sorry, I just want to bring in Tracy. You mentioned there about it's different for people who've been working at home, perhaps, than people, sorry, and those who've not.
Yeah. Firstly, can I apologise to everyone? I have a new laptop and the camera is not working. So
no worries.
My mental health is being tested here.
No worries. If you just like to tell us where you are. Quickly, Tracy.
My name is Tracy Crystal. I still work a couple of days as Group HR Manager for Malin Engineering, but I run Crystal HR and Crystal Coaching as a consultancy. My point today is about the fact that a number of line managers have really struggled with this sort of kind of furlough envy, if I can put it across like that, where they've had people who were off last year and then back, or they've had people that can work from home and others that cannot. And what they're finding is, certainly my experience and observation is, there's a pendulum swing between, you know, that they do all seem to be presenting mental health type issues or type symptoms, but it's the managers are struggling to deal with the sort of idea that, you know, some have maybe had it a little bit more easier than others. And that has been a real challenge this year, so much so, kind of developed some guider and questioning for them. They're really struggling with people who may be at burnout as well. And those are the ones who have been working throughout the pandemic.
Yeah. Rachel, I've lost you on the screen. Oh, there you are. Yeah. Any just swift comment back for Tracy? I'm just aware of time.
I mean, I think you've just outlined some of the real challenges there are and some of the risks around inclusion as well, in terms of workplaces where everybody's been affected differently because of the pandemic, and it hasn't been equal. There hasn't been an equal impact on people in terms of their health, their personal circumstances, caring, and their job, whether they've had to be in the so-called front line or not, or they're working from home. That is another challenge for line managers to manage. But should we bring in Crystal? Because I know, Crystal, you've had your hand.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, it certainly definitely needs to be person-centred, doesn't it? It's absolutely person-centred. Yeah, Crystal, just if you could say what you need to say in just one sentence, that would be perfect. I'm sorry, I know we're running out of time. Well, you need to unmute yourself. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't. Thank you, Brisa. I'm Crystal Wilkinson. I'm a senior lecturer at Manchester Met Uni, so I research health, wellbeing at work. And I think one thing, if people are reluctant to talk, and we talked about various things in our group, but one thing when people are reluctant to talk is, you know, they do fear the consequences of that. And I think it's really important for employers and managers to be aware of kind of the productivity element of it, as well as it's just wellbeing. So if we're supporting people with mental health, with their challenges, if we're looking at the demands, looking at the resources, having discussions about what job demands have you got, what resources have you got, what might help, it will help the business be more productive, it will help you be more productive, it will help the team more productive. I'm not doing you a favour. And I think, you know, if we can have both of those, and that, you know, as well as signposting to specialist support when you need it. And sometimes in discussions with the whole team, you know, if we are discussing the demands and resources of everyone, and so we'll help with that perceptions of equity, feeling that you are aware of the different challenges of different people, and also help people be a bit more aware of you know, who else might be struggling and where we can support each other. So
yeah, really important point. It's not just about being philanthropic. People want to thrive at work, and it is about helping people, giving them what they need, removing some of the barriers at work so they can fulfill their potential, because that's
the other very big point as well is talking up. So the line managers need to be saying, look, if I'm having to support and make reasonable adjustments and take workload off people, people above me need to give me the support to get extra headcount, or say these priorities aren't as important, they can wait, because otherwise the managers are put in an impossible position.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's about supporting everyone, but it's about seeing that as priority, isn't it? Rather than something that happens as an afterthought. It's actually central, right? Because if you've got the right person in the right job, then they're going to do well if they're well. So it's about really supporting one another. Drew, I'm sorry, we have we're out of time, I'm afraid. I'm sure it was a fabulous point. Perhaps we'll be able to share it in the chat or something. I'm going to hand over now to my colleague Angus.
Thank you. And Rachel, thank you very much. That was wonderful, really insightful. I think it's clear there's a lot of work to do on behalf of lots of organisations. I like the points you were making about make mental health a natural part of a conversation. And it's common sense things. It's simple, open questions, really listening, noticing, and don't interpret. So thank you. Thank you very much, Rachel. It was wonderful. Apologies again for the issues with the Zoom link. That is rather frustrating on our part. But we will get that right next time.
Thank you for your persistence in getting here.
So moving on, we have an offer for everybody. We have a free webinar on confidence, supportive conversations. This is on the 28th of January at 11:30. We will be sending the link out, so please feel free to join us in. We also have the next First Thursday Wellbeing Hour. This is on the 3rd of February, and it's with Ali McDowell, who's co-founder of the Positive Planners. It's about writing for wellbeing. There's lots of research out there saying how important this is for our wellbeing to write a journal. So again, please feel free to join us there. I think that is really it. I'd like to thank you all for coming along today. It's been really good. It's been really interesting. And also, Rachel, I hope your son passes his driving test.